This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back to business. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel. Hour number two of the big show, as we've got one in the books and two to go. And we had Charlie Pilillo from 1:30 to 2 covered a wide variety of topics, as we normally do, to get Charlie's insight before we continue to roll. But we covered two of the main topics that I think we both had on our list today. Nick, all three of us were talking about it. You just hope that the Astros are just biding their time to do whatever they're going to do. But a tad bit concerning, in my mind, that they haven't done anything yet and everybody else in the division is.
I think if you were past the winter meetings, then you would want to be concerned. But as of now, I'm not. But again, this is a team that's, like I said last segment, it's a management team that's been prone to wait a little longer. They don't feel like they have to do everything, so let's hope that's not the case.
Yeah, they have a tendency to have a reputation of being on tape delay, and it worked out for them, as you mentioned, with the Verlander acquisition.
Yeah.
But you hope they don't wait too long. A lot of people are throwing out the name Yu Darvish now. Why? You don't need him. We just said they have a plethora of starters. And
who's throwing out Yu Darvish's name?
Several people on Twitter were talking about Yu Darvish. Someone before the show even started said, you know, imagine if Yu comes to the Astros. And I'm like, they don't need him. Now, the one intriguing thing that I did want to run by you, because you and I had several discussions throughout the year about pitching anyway, but there is a notion out there that the best spot for Lance McCullers would be to be in your bullpen. Your thoughts?
No. I think Lance McCullers is one of your best pitchers, and you want your best pitchers in your rotation.
Now, the argument being that he can't stay healthy, that he only, you know, that he gets to the 100, 125 inning mark and he starts to break down. And that it would be better for him in short stints. But then I think people forget the fact that as a closer, assuming you're winning games, you're going to pitch several days in a row. You know, you got to get up, get ready, then go down, then get up again. Not exactly ideal for a guy with, you know, any kind of concerns in his arm or his elbows.
No, and this isn't a guy winding down his career like a John Smoltz, where you can move him to the bullpen and get that same effectiveness. This is a guy who's still relatively young, who has the makeup and potential to be an ace, to win a Cy Young. He's got that kind of stuff. And I don't think you go put that in the bullpen just because you're too lazy to go get a closer.
And I agree with you. Look, I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, use the whole Morton McCullers philosophy. Well, why would you do that? Because that was a playoff series, not 162. 162 is a whole new ballgame.
Yeah, that is a completely different scenario. And that was, you know, a couple of games at that, so... No.
Exactly.
And he's coming back from injury, and yeah, don't let the playoffs and what they needed and had, they also had to do that because their bullpen sucked. If they had a reliable bullpen in the playoffs, you may not have needed to use those guys. You may not have needed to run them out there. So don't let that skew your judgment on how a bullpen should normally be handled and made up.
Absolutely. So we got a little baseball talk out of the way there, but plenty more to talk to at some point, because there was a lot of movement. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that happened in baseball. I mean, Charlie, when you can stump Charlie, I mean, you're doing something. But Charlie didn't even know that Morrow, the relief pitcher that we had talked about from the Dodgers that would be so advantageous to adding to the Astros bullpen, has joined the Cubs. Luke Gregerson has joined the Cardinals. So some moves are being made prior to the start of the winter meetings. But again, hopefully Jeff Luhnow and his staff are going to be very active this week in Orlando and come up with at least one or two, as they had not promised but had guesstimated that they would make at least one or two moves to hopefully fortify that bullpen a little bit more.
So somebody had this question for you, and I'm interested to see what you guys think as well. It says, first off, a fan throwing anything at a player is wrong, but would you agree that the two plays by Bennett and Jefferson on the kneel down were out of line? Would you call that a dirty play?
So that's the Seattle game against Carolina. If you didn't see it, the fans got involved throwing drinks from the stands at the players after they had been ejected, and both players went low on the kneel downs. I do think that sometimes guys do take out their last... kind of a Gronk-esque way, but not as physical. But I think guys take out their frustrations in losing the game on the kneel down, where they take free shots at guys. But you know, in the Bennett case, I think he dove down a little bit. I don't think that it was like...
It was trying to grab the ball is what it looked like to me. We were taught that, I mean, in Pop Warner.
You try to slap at it.
Yeah, you try to snag the ball before it can get to the quarterback's hands on the center quarterback exchange. If for some reason you manage to get that, you might have a shot. Do you normally want to do that? No, it can be taken as a bit disrespectful. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like in basketball. Going down and just throwing up a last-second shot even though you're up. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. I don't think that was dirty.
A lot of people have the basketball problem because of the fact that you're rubbing it in. But from that perspective, I mean, if he would have been like the running start and taken a, you know, a chop block from the side of the knee, it's one thing. But everybody's already assuming it's going to be low, it's going to be just a quick snap, and everybody's going to fall down, that – he didn't really go full speed ahead and target the knees, but he did go low. And I think he was trying to send that message. But on the very next play, the message obviously got through to his players, because that's when that move really warranted an immediate ejection, because he went flying through the first line of linemen and tried to get all the way to the quarterback. And that's when you really have problems. Jefferson?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely something that I was against. But in terms of Bennett, it didn't look like he was overly forceful with it. He was just kind of trying to say a message, like, you guys, you know, it was a very chippy game, and it got him fired up.
And by the way, it was Jacksonville that Seattle was playing.
Oh, Jacksonville, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Here's what I would have done, though. If I'm Jacksonville and you do that once, or maybe you do that, man, I'm liable to just try to throw one deep just to piss you off. For doing that,
you know what, that would be completely warranted in my book. If you start playing it that way, then all bets are off. You want to start that crap? Well, then we can do everything that's unwritten rule.
I mean, yeah, like instead of like I'd fake the kneel down, like I would act like I would touch, bootleg out, you know what I mean? Have a guy running down the field, something like that, just to rub it in. Just if you're gonna be
I'm
like
with
that,
you.
But I don't know that I get why it escalated, but I think that the problem. The separate issue here is what the fans did.
No question.
Do you think what Quentin Jefferson did was wrong?
No, I don't.
Just
here's
leave
the thing.
It at that.
Here's the thing. And the NBA has really increased their rules too about the expectations of players, and their self-control is really almost asking too much. And the NFL is too. If you think that a guy who's minding his business, running to the tunnel because he's been ejected, not helmet still on, not jawing, not doing anything, and a beer comes whistling by his head, and that's only the first one of three different drinks that were thrown his way. If you're supposed to just sit there, twiddle your thumbs and go, ha, that's pretty cool. That's all right. I'll ignore that. As he said in the locker room, very, very, he was very, very eloquent in saying it. He was classy for at least addressing it. And then, of course, Bennett got involved in it and broke the whole thing up and made a whole other comments. But he said, hey, I'm a man. The fans who threw it are men. But as a grown man, if someone's throwing things at you like that and you're supposed to just sit there and take it, you try it. Because especially coming off of a play where in the heat of the moment, he's really fired up. And now some jackass in the stands feels like he's going to be a hero for 15 seconds and try and hit him in the head with a drink. I hope they revoke that fan season tickets. I hope they identify who he is. I hope he's not allowed in any more NFL games. And I hope he learns a lesson, just like the guy was in Toronto during the playoffs that almost hit the Orioles outfielder.
Yeah, he should have. Jefferson should have been allowed to go in the stands and whoop that dude's ass. I have no problem with him going after him. If put it this way, if someone was heckling a player and the player ran over to the wall and threw Gatorade in the dude's face, I would feel the same way about that dude and that player in reverse. There's one thing to shout things at the player as he's walking off. That's within the fans' right. That's part of the sport. As a player, you kind of know fans are going to shout mean things at you. You get that. But when you start physically throwing things at people, I'm all bets are off. If he would have somehow managed to make it into the stands and whoop that dude's ass, I would have had no problem with it, and that dude deserved it. All three of those dudes deserved it.
Now, I don't disagree with that at all. And like I said, I think their tickets should be revoked. I think they should face. Because here's the thing. In the court of law, he threw the first punch, whoever the fan is that threw the drink. Because like you said, you can talk till you're blue in the face. But the minute you try and physically harm someone with your actions, you essentially have put that person on the defensive. They are not the offensive. They are defending themselves because you tried to throw and hit them wherever you were aiming. You almost hit him in the head with the first one, and then two more came down. That's your can of worms to deal with.
And now he's going to get suspended because those fans are jerks.
Unfortunately, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Now, I know they're trying to avoid another malice at the palace, and we saw what would happen because if he did go up in the stands, and by the way, Butterbean or whoever he was, the security guy, he got lucky.
He horse-collared
him. He horse-collared the hell out of him. Otherwise, he was gone. He was up in the stands. But we know that that would have really gotten out of hand in a hurry. But at the same time, I don't fault him for trying because I'd have been ticked off as all get out, too, if you throw three different drinks at my head.
And can we talk a little bit about Blake Bortles out-dueling Russell Wilson?
And that's
for the second
something.
Week in a row, looking pretty good. A couple of touchdown passes.
You can, because that's your team and you pick
77 QBR. If he continues to play well, I'm not saying that they beat New England or anything like that. But they'll scare some folks in the playoffs.
Especially because
if he can just
that man 27 toting the rock behind him.
101 yards and a touchdown.
And some physical yards when they needed him. He's not afraid to bowl people over. And by the way, when the teams were getting into it, the guy that was willing to take on Michael Bennett was Leonard Fournette.
Yep.
So, yeah, Jacksonville's playing right at the right time of the year, too. They're primed, and the Tennessee Titans slipped up yesterday. So, the door's wide open to win that division. We'll see how that goes. We can talk about some football. We can talk about basketball. Your Rockets got another big win on the road against Portland on Saturday night. They play tonight against the Pelicans at Toyota Center. Whatever's on your mind, if you want to talk to us, 713-780-3776. You can hit that HR&P Lister line to call or text, or you can hit us on Twitter. It's the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Play fake. Bortles drops. Steps up. Fires deep down the middle of the field. He's got a receiver out there. Keelan Cole with the catch. Inside the 30. The 20. The 15. Inside the 5. Keelan Cole. Touchdown. How's that for an answer? 75-yard touchdown pass.
This is the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, the boys are back. It's Barry, Nick, and Joel right here on the usual suspects in H-Town and wherever you may be. If you have downloaded that app, if you haven't, please do. It's the easiest way to catch us anywhere and everywhere you go. Just download the app and you can take us with you just like you were taking your man purse if you were Barry Warner, if you were going on a trip. That was the Jaguars Radio Network giving us a little highlight from the Jags beating the Seahawks. You called that one right. I did not. Russell Wilson's been playing at a very high level, but you're right. Blake Bortles in the last 2 weeks has looked like someone just came in and took over his body and is playing it a lot differently because he threw with touch, he threw a deep ball with accuracy, and he was able to manage the game, which all things that have been challenging to him in the past. It looks like that team is really starting to put it together at the right time. We already know how great their defense is.
Yep, playing like a man possessed that can run the ball if he can just not screw it up. If he can just stay within himself, I think the Jags can do a little bit of damage. Like I said, they might be able to make a run.
Well, I don't think a lot of teams want to see him because of that versatility you're talking about. Yeah, you can hope that Blake Bortles makes a mistake. But one, you know one thing's for sure. They're going to bring that defense and that top-notch defense to the table. And then secondly, and more importantly, they have balance on the offensive side of the ball because as long as he makes the smart decisions, he doesn't have to be a hero.
Nope.
As long as you can have 27 toting the rock and Fournette's going to get you 100 yards and pound it, you can eat up clock. You can go on sustained drives. You can do the things that really make up a good playoff football team.
And the beautiful thing is, if he does turn it over, that defense is good enough that it can be there's some forgiveness there, where if he puts them in a bad situation, maybe they turn, you know, a fumble in the pocket or a bad interception in their own, you know, within their own 20-yard line. Maybe they still are able to hold up and turn that into 3 points instead of seven. So that bodes well for them as well. Even if he does Blake Bortles it every once in a while, that defense can bail him out.
Yeah, no question about it. Other big news that we've been talking about, we talked about Jefferson going in the stands for Seattle in that game. Then across the league, the devastating news for the Philadelphia Eagles, a game that I did predict right. The Eagles beat the Rams in the Coliseum, but devastating news in the fact that the MRI results are in case you missed it, and Carson Wentz is out for the rest of the year. A very, very tough injury to take as he was trying to squeak into the end zone. He got hit from both sides, and he has a torn ACL.
God, that sucks.
Brutal, man. And I've got Eagle fans texting me going, now I know how you feel when you lost Rodgers. I said, yeah, but be aware of one thing. You have a competent backup. I was impressed by Nick Foles yesterday.
Yeah, that is a good thing. I think I saw his record is pretty good. Not great, but it's good. When he was a starter there, I think he had like 26 interceptions or 26 touchdowns, two interceptions over a period of time, which was that's pretty damn good. He didn't throw any touchdowns. He went 6 of 10, 42 yards, but he can play. He's still a backup, but he can play. It's not going from, Aaron Rodgers to Brett Hundley. It's not going from even Watson to Savage. Nick Foles is a competent backup and might be one of the more competent backups in the NFL.
No question about it. That's what I was getting at. I mean, the biggest thing is you got a guy that's at least have been there, done that, and is capable of leading a team, as opposed to the scenarios that you just mentioned. Green Bay and Texans come to mind. It is actually more intelligent than most teams think to have a capable guy at the number two spot.
Yep. I mean, when you look at a team like Minnesota, they kind of got lucky, right? They bring in Sam Bradford after Bridgewater goes down. He plays pretty well. He goes down. They bring in Case Keenum. He's playing well. Give a lot of credit to that coaching staff. But so some of it's luck because Case Keenum was a backup here and he didn't play well. So what you need from Foles is to manage the game. Don't do anything stupid. And hopefully, Ajayi can be what you hoped when you traded for him and that defense can hold up. But I tell you what, I hate saying it, but that was their season.
It very well could be.
I would have told you that I could have seen Philly making it all the way to the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz as their quarterback. That's not happening now.
I don't know. Call me crazy, but I could see a scenario because of how solid they are across the board. You mentioned Ajayi, but you also got LeGarrette Blount. So you got a two-headed monster there that could pound the rock. You've got a staunch defense with a great secondary and a good defensive line. You've got some options. Even you got guys on the outside, and here's the thing. In just a quick blink of an eye, you put Foles in the game, and he immediately puts you on drives where he puts you in position to eventually and inevitably win the game. I could see them still. The NFC is not solid loaded with teams like the Patriots and Steelers where I go, I could still see a scenario where they get there. They're going to get blasted in the Super Bowl, I think, but I think they could get there.
I think Minnesota becomes the odds-on favorite.
So you're going to go with Foles against Case Keenum?
I'm just saying the way that he's playing, the way that they're playing. If you're not going to pick them, then it's the Rams or the Saints, right? But the Eagles, to me, move behind those three teams. So now it's who do you like better? The Vikings, I think, are playing better than the Rams and the Saints. But any of those three teams could end up representing the NFC over the Eagles. And don't forget the Falcons are in it.
This could open the door because
the Eagles, we're going to get the bye if they held on and the Vikings as well. So you probably had the Rams playing the Falcons and the Saints and the Panthers if the Seahawks don't make it, if the Lions don't make it. But as it stands right now, this might bode really well for the teams at the bottom Atlanta and Carolina.
They can run the table.
Oh, goodness.
I just had to throw that in.
I know. But, I mean, those teams that are now, 4, 5, and 6, they may have a better shot now.
Well, there's a team that definitely didn't want to see Russell Wilson like they did 2 weeks ago when Seattle beat him at home. But when you know that offensively you may be a little hamstrung,
yeah,
it's a different ball game. You're right. And you know what? The Rams they were in it yesterday, so I don't think they're any slouches. But I thought that defense was going to step up a little bit more. That was a slugfest with a lot of points being scored. That was a hell of a football game to watch yesterday.
Well, after they've done what they've done, they're 2-2 over their last four.
Yep.
They've lost to the Vikings and Eagles. They've got the big win against the Saints, and then they beat the Cardinals, which you never know. Cardinals are Jekyll and Hyde this year. But in the last four games, they've played three playoff teams and lost two of those.
Yeah.
So the Rams, I keep picking them, but they're starting to fade, it looks like, a little bit. The Saints, have hit a few bumps in the road. They've lost two of their last three as well. Same thing. They faced a couple of playoff teams. They've three in a row, and they've lost two of those.
Yeah, in terms of the Rams, I saw a different Jared Goff. When the lights get brighter and the games get more important, you can't replace how valuable it is to have that experience of big-time games. He was quadruple pumping on certain dropbacks yesterday, and I'm like, oh, you can't do that. So, yeah, the Rams still have a little bit of work to do, although they're a very talented team. But I'm with you. I think they might be fading a little bit. But I think that, yeah, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. Atlanta's still got to play New Orleans. You know, Carolina's got to earn it, but they looked like a different team yesterday, put a lot of points on the board. But overall, I don't know. I think we're both in agreement, but I would say, you know, you're playing for second no matter who comes out of the NFC. I think between the Steelers and the Patriots, that's the cream of the crop.
Well, the Steelers were my pick to win the Super Bowl, so I'm sticking with that. But I'm looking at this NFC because to me it's kind of intriguing now because Carolina is starting to get hot. Mm-hmm. They, you know, other than that loss to the Saints, they're picking it up. Hell, they had just that one loss since they lost to the Bears.
They put a boatload of points up yesterday.
Yeah, Minnesota is playing well. Of course, they lost yesterday to the Panthers, but the Panthers are hot. We just said that. And don't sleep on the Falcons. They've won four of their last five. The one that they did lose was to the Vikings. But when you start comparing records of teams that have played, you know, playoff contenders in the last couple of 3 weeks, they beat the Saints, they beat the Seahawks, they've lost to the Vikings. So.
And to add to that, they also have that one thing I just said. They have that experience. They were the Super Bowl representative last year, and they know what it takes to get there and blow a 25-point lead. So they know what it takes to run through the NFC. And as we've said all season long, you put that team on turf, they can play with anybody if they're healthy, and they got Freeman back now. So,
and I love that they're playing the Saints and the Panthers to end the season.
Mm-hmm. So look,
that's going to be fun couple of weeks.
I was going to say, nothing else from a fan's perspective, no matter who gets in and who's out in the NFC, it's going to be really fun to watch how it all shakes out.
Well, the Vikings have three layups. Bengals, Packers, Bears.
Oh, that middle game might be tougher than you.
Just layups at the end.
All right, we'll continue to roll on. If you want to talk about some football, we're here for you. We can talk about the Rockets because they're red hot and they continue to roll. So we can talk basketball. We can talk anything that's on your mind within reason. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter, usual suspects, ESPN 97.5. They try to step to the Mac, then they got jacked. To the back, you be putting your kids. That's a
coincidental. Act like you know it, don't be claiming that's mental. ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, out of the halftime break and ready for the second half of the big show. It's Barry, it's Nick, it's Joel, and our special guest is a man that I am very, very happy to say is going to have the opportunity to join us now, hopefully at least frequently, if not more often, because of the fact that we're not handing off in a tag team match like we used to be. But my man Sean Salisbury is in studio with us, a absolute football expert and a maestro of the dad joke. So you know I appreciate him more than most.
Yes, maestro.
Is it not a necessary resource to use in radio?
If you are not part of the dad joke society or part of the dad jokes, or if you can't bring a dad joke or laugh at one, then, well, you're probably smarter than I am.
That's right, because Barry kills me for him all the time.
That's right. So, no, I love a good dad joke. And, you know, I actually think it's starting to sweep the nation. I'm starting to see it. I see it on talk shows. I see it on comedies now. If a good dad joke always wins. And then the problem is when you throw a dad joke on, like Nick, you know,
right,
Sharara's age, even though Nick looks like he's like 18, but he's about 22, you know.
Yep.
That they're like, Sean, you got to forget I wasn't born when that comedy show was on. I never heard of the word MASH, the show MASH or anything, you know, but I love it. So, yeah, I'll always get a dad joke. That's never going away. It's good to be on with you guys, man.
And
you guys are killing it as you always do.
The thing is, sweeping the nation like a game show you mentioned. But, look, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy are still on. So, you know what? That's why those dad jokes have longevity.
That's it. And people keep referencing them and coming. Why would you give them up?
There you go.
You know what I mean? People don't quit drinking wine when it's 12 years old, do they?
No.
That's when they start drinking it.
Become a connoisseur.
Feel me, Nikki? It's time to start drinking it, brother.
All right, we know you got other stuff to do, so we want to get to some of the true stuff that people want to hear you talk about too. But your thoughts on Savage yesterday, and of course the controversy. He comes back for the quick series. You could see from what we saw, and obviously I assume you were watching it too, that the hands shaking and the look on his face. I don't know any reason why that guy should have been back on the field.
No question. Not a doctor. None of us are. I mean, you guys know, you've heard me on here and talking about it. I'm one of those guys that thinks at times we overprotect players, especially the quarterback position I play. I do. I think we've taken some of the physicality out. But there's also some damn common sense. We ask our players to play excellent and be the best of what they do, and the coaches. I got to demand the same from a doctor. Yeah. I do. If I'm driving down the street and I'm a doctor and a friend sitting next to me has a seizure and we pull over to the side of the road to help him, am I going to turn right around and say, hey, why don't you drive?
Yeah.
You just, I mean, spitting point. Up blood. There's got to be some common sense. And most players I know that I played with, and I was one of them when I got a concussion, but protocol has changed over the years, obviously, for many obvious reasons. There's a difference between being tough and wanting to win as opposed to, come on, man. You know, 40 years, when they're 40 and 50 years old, don't know how to get to their daughter's house. Yeah. I mean, or to their daughter's school or son. That's when you know, oh, my gosh. And I'm not saying this hit will cause that. God forbid anything like that happens. Or C.J. Fedorowicz, what he's going through. But always trying to tell a player not to go back in, that's like telling him, you know, you're soft. You don't want to go. We're always told that. We want to go back and get you on the field. So, of course, Tom's going to ask. But he wouldn't have passed a drunk driving test. I mean, walking around. I don't know what visual you need to see. People always ask me, what's protocol? I don't know. Somebody shows signs of it. Doesn't mean that every hit to the head requires protocol, but show signs of it. Okay, you take him into the tent, take him in the locker room. And he came back in for the two plays, and what did you saw on the sidelines of the blood being spit up, and he can't see straight, and he was seizuring in the end zone, laying down. Did in the other two plays said, oh, why? Because he wasn't as sharp, so we'll take him out. If I had a compound fracture in my elbow, what do we do? Just tape it up and stick me back in? There are some things, and I know concussions aren't tangible, but the way you look into a guy's eyes, you can tell when a guy's drunk, can't you? Yeah. Just looking into his eyes, there's somebody that's stoned out of their mind. And I'm not being a smartass. I'm being serious. And as a doctor and an expert in your field, I'm not saying the doctors are negligent, but what are you looking at that tells you that guy, the second blood starts to come out, and it's not a tooth or one of those. What, do we got to have blood coming out of the guy's ears and his head half off?
Yeah.
I mean, Tom Savage did not, as tough as he wanted to be, that's just stupid and horrendous, horrendous job putting him back in the football game because he talked his way onto the field.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, and it's not the first time that we've seen it this year, but you hate to see these guys going back out there if they don't need to be. Talk a little bit about the situation in Philadelphia. How do you see this playing out now that Carson Wentz is going to miss the rest of the year?
Yeah, Barry, at the beginning of the year on our television show on BN Sports, shameless promo, 5 to 7 Eastern, I said, okay, let's go through to the and we've talked about backups when Rodgers got hurt for Joel, about Hundley, is how important it is to go find that guy and invest in that guy. And the reason why I know that, also, and I'm a little partial to him, I was that guy that had to get in and win a game to get to the playoffs. And I say, it will be the difference on a lot of teams, whether you miss the playoffs and go home, whether you make the playoffs and stay in, or whether you are just still horrible like the Denver Broncos, no matter who you play. So here's a Nick Foles who's been a starter, been a backup, accepted both roles, and did both roles when he was in Philadelphia. It was 27-2, touchdowns there. Not bad. So what the Eagles did, decided, you know, we got to go out and protect ourselves. And Wentz plays reckless at times. Kind of plays a lot like our guy Andrew Luck does. He needs to learn how to slide. And it's horrendous because he was having an MVP year. What, he was up to 33 touchdown passes, I think, even before he got hurt. But you can't. You want to pout, but you can't. The fans will do that. You get a few days to suffer. Wentz will go back to rehab, and he'll come back stronger and more hungry than ever. But now you can't. You still got to put a game plan in. They're still got a chance to have home field advantage. So, Barry, you know what? Does it diminish their chances a little bit? Sure it does, because we're in a deep NFC, very deep. But think about the teams, guys, that haven't protected themselves with backups. What happens if Russell Wilson goes out? They can't survive,
dude. He's kept them afloat single-handedly.
Yes, you can't even survive barely with Blake Bortles as your starter, let alone if somebody like that. But you know what I mean? Thank goodness for defense. So it is so important. I'm not saying it pat the backup on the back, but You don't get reps most of the year. You're throwing scout team in to stay ready mentally. And then when your time's called upon to make that throw he made on the out cut on third down and made a perfect throw to extend the drive last night, that ended up being the difference in a football game. It'll be, and it's also going to be the difference, Nick Foles, and are you going to get home field advantage throughout? Are you going on the road to play in the playoffs in Minnesota or somewhere else? It's extremely important, devastating to the Eagles, but you don't have, what did Jesse Ventura say in Predator? You know, I ain't got time to bleed. We don't have time to look back, and that's why you protect yourself and invest in a good backup.
Last segment, I said it. I'm saying there's still a possibility they could win the NFC because they have defense, because they have all the skill positions. And just like you said, unlike what the Texans have dealt with backups, unlike what Green Bay did with Brett Hundley, they've got a guy that has experience that has led a football team.
Yes, and put a bunch of wins on the board. He's also seen the other side, getting beat out, being a backup, getting booed. I'm going to tell you, Philadelphia ain't an easy place to play now.
Right.
And he was booed in St. Louis, you know, when he was there as a backup. And he went to Kansas City. He's seen the top 27-2. There ain't many guys go that route. And then to lose your starting job, and now he's seen it. He's back where he's comfortable. So the pressure's not going to bother him. Now, will he make the same plays Wentz? No, because he's not Wentz.
Right.
But if you can throw me two touchdowns and no picks and get me to there, now we got a chance because they run it effectively enough. They're physical as hell up front, and their defense will keep them in games. All a guy like that, and I don't want to hear this, oh, go manage it, don't play not to lose. Screw that. You're my backup. You get paid. We pay you a lot of money. Take your butt out there and throw me some plays and go. I'm not changing my game plan. You're a 6'5", 235-pound dude. You're going to do what Carson did. Maybe not as well, but if you can just be aggressive and do what we do and what you've prepared yourself for and not worry about, you don't need to be Carson Wentz, but take care of your business, we're going to be okay.
That's why you're the best, man. Sean Salisbury, by the way, no blatant plugs. We'll do it for you. Be In Sports. Check it. It's 4 to 6 Central. Here on Dish, it's channel 408 on DirecTV 620 and on Comcast 726, because I did my homework.
Thank you, sir.
And I watched.
I appreciate that.
Real quick before you go.
I was going to lead him into what I think you're going
go ahead.
To.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, but the one thing that I did want to get in on as well, too, because I want you, the listeners, the usual suspects out there, to join in if you can. But Shawnee's doing something. A lot of people know him for all of his knowledge, but they're not quite as aware as we are as how big of a heart this guy has. And he's got something. He's not going to travel for the holidays. He sent out a tweet the other day, and I wanted to make sure everybody's aware of it. He's going to do something special for the holidays for some of those people that don't have as much come the Christmas time.
Yeah, and I'll make this short. You guys got to go. And I appreciate it. What I lack in looks and smarts, I'll try to make up for with a non-Grinch-sized heart at times. You know, I know what rock bottom we've talked about. I know what rock bottom looks like. And Santa Claus, kids deserve to have Santa Claus, and families do. So that's one with presents aside. But next week, it'll be Wednesday or Thursday. I'm just trying to find the best day, and it'll be in the next day or so that I'll announce it. I'll make sure on here or on Twitter get it out. But I'm just going to go buy a couple hundred hams and turkeys and hand them outside. I'm working with Scott McClellan at HEB, mm-hmm. who's going to allow me to buy the turkeys and hams from him, and also put me in touch with somebody and, you know, to feed families that aren't going to have Christmas. It is not. So we'll do it the right way. We'll pick the right location. And then I'm going to pick families 12 days of Christmas to where we deliver Christmas gifts to their house so they have Santa. And it may not be much, but you know what? Every kid deserves, if you celebrate Christmas, to wake up with a present or two or three under the tree. And everybody deserves to eat. And I've been on plenty of vacations. And quite frankly, I'm going to eat and I got a roof over my head. So I'll let you guys know. And I get a lot. The feedback's great. And I only do it because I don't want somebody to wake up on Christmas morning and say, man, where am I going to go to eat? We have enough of that going on in our country. And I, quite frankly, my vacation can wait. So
awesome,
I'll let
man.
You guys.
Nick's
it'll be,
a huge
it'll
fan
it'll be,
of Santa Claus,
it'll
too.
It'll be Wednesday or Thursday of next week. I'll give you the exact time and date.
Will there also be an opportunity for people to donate if
so absolutely.
For that 12
well,
days
of
Christmas?
Course. I will never turn – somebody wants to donate and bring something or bring a wrapped gift for a kid or a fan – I will never turn that down. It will get to the right hands, and it's for nothing more than hopefully. And I've challenged buddies and people, normal, you know, people that aren't celebrities, people that don't host radio shows across the country, and got feedback for them to do the same thing. You know what? We remember holidays, but what we'll remember more 15 years from now, 5 years from now, is the look on a kid's face or a family's face that knows they finally don't have to worry about going out and spending money to eat, and they'll get to eat. So all donations are welcome, and it's hey, we'll turn it into a party and make it a fun thing and have a great time.
Amen,
anyway.
Brother. I already said, you get us the information, we'll get it out there. And I said, if you need me, I'm there. So I believe in it. I think it's a great cause. It's a great idea. And it's all by you. So we're going to be here to support that, and we appreciate that. But we definitely want you to be a part of this whenever you can.
I'm here whenever you guys want me. I love you, man. I appreciate both of you. Thank you,
man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Sean Salisbury right there. Like I said, hey, make sure you check him in on BN Sports. You can see that face in color, which, well, you know. He's got co-hosts, too, but there's nothing like a good Sean Salisbury face.
And follow him on Twitter as well.
Great follow on Twitter. But Dish Network Channel 408, DirecTV 620, Comcast 726. It's BN Sports. Also, Sean, always a part of the Gal family. Great to have him on. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with a whole lot more. This is The Usual Suspects. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, knee deep in hour number two of the 3-hour show. We've been very football centric today, but we've covered the bases with some of the best, including Sean Salisbury, who's always great having on, and he's a lot of fun. And as he told you, what he's doing over the holidays is just fantastic.
It'll make me want to run through a wall.
Yeah, it
just gets you hyped.
And we've talked about the fact that Sean's been coaching Grant Gunnell, the quarterback prospect out of St. Pius, that's at least. Indications are he had signed to go to A&M until Sumlin left. We'll see what that happens. But he is that kid's quarterback coach, has been since eighth grade. That's pretty impressive when you know that what goes on with that man and how he gives back. And a lot of people, we half kiddingly and very seriously later when U of H's coaching job came open, said that guy'd be a great quarterback coach, if not more. But the more these jobs come open and the more these kids need guidance and someone that can really teach them the ways of a quarterback, why wouldn't you take Sean Salisbury?
He would do a hell of a job. Hell of a job.
Because he can get in your grill when he needs to, but he can nurture you when he needs to, and he knows the mechanics of the position and the intelligence it takes to really play the position correctly. If you're a parent and you got a kid that's playing that position growing up, why wouldn't you send him to Sean Salisbury?
I had 1,000 things I wanted to ask him, and we only had 11 minutes.
Oh, yeah, you can go on and on with Sean.
I wanted to ask him about Shazier. I wanted to ask him about just a ton of things. That the quote, dirty play, trying to snatch the ball while they're hiking it at the end. I just getting beer thrown at you. I just wanted to ask about, because I could just, that's why, yeah.
You're just on NFL. Then you go to college and start talking about the coaching carousel.
Recruiting.
Tennessee and that fiasco and everything else. Because he's had, like I said, great follow, and you mentioned it. Great follow on Twitter. Dude will tell you his opinion on every, one thing you don't need to do is ask twice. He's going to give you his opinion, and it's normally straight from the heart. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So we talked about a lot of football, but we'd be remiss if we don't talk about the team playing down on Crawford Street. The Rockets are playing great basketball, and I stayed up and watched them play Saturday night in Portland. That's a house of horrors for them over the years, not just because of Lillard's shot. They seem to always find a way to blow a game and lose in Portland. And they were down for 3/4 of the game, and yet they just found a way to persevere and win and made a run to start the 4th quarter. It started with Harden on the bench. I was going to mention to you guys, the suicide lineup was almost intact, the death squad. Everybody but Capella was on the floor, and they were doing exactly what I had hoped they would do. In the passing lanes, one and done on shots on the defensive end, getting out and running and executing on the break. But when you had Paul Ariza, Mbah Mute, PJ Tucker, and I forget who they put out there instead of Capella when they went small, that lineup was devastating. And before you knew it, a 14-point deficit was a 3-point lead. Harden came back on the floor. They finished the deal. That's a great win for that team.
Yeah. If you watch the post game, the first thing out of Harden's mouth was, we needed some adversity. He didn't want to, he kind of did, but he was talking about the fact that things have been easy for us and we've been kind of coasting and we needed to face some adversity. And he's right. This team has been playing so well that they weren't tested, and that you kind of didn't know how they would respond with Chris Paul in and how you down the stretch. Are they going to have, we talk about how good their defense is, but we've seen it, turn around a 3rd quarter and win them a game a few nights ago. But that Portland game, they, again, Their offense was predicated off of that defense. They got serious on that end of the ball when it mattered. Trevor Ariza coming in and having a big game down the stretch for them defensively and just making the little plays, not being the hero, but doing the dirty work.
Absolutely.
Doing that work in the trenches. And, yeah, I mean, that's a really good – not that Portland's great, but that's a good win to overcome that adversity on the road.
And like I said, on the road in a place that you've had difficulty in the past. Preach, Reverend Laminack, because you're speaking my language. You used the term that I've used forever and a day, and I haven't used it in the last year or so, but now I'm going to use it again with the Rockets. The Rockets and Rockets basketball has always, even from the Rudy T era, has been defined as turning good defense turns into easy offense for that team. That's exactly spot on, because when they got stops, they turned it into easy baskets on the other end. They're going to put you on your heels defensively, but can you get the stops so that you're not just taking the ball out of the basket and going and you get out quicker? That was the key to the game the other night again. And again, Chris Paul undefeated since he's actually played with the Rockets, and he's, I think it's 10-0 now. But just what he brings in intangibles is one thing, and his leadership is another. And the fact that, like I said, the best thing that could have happened to this team was he sat for 14 straight games and got to observe next to the coaches to see where he would best fit in so they didn't turn out to be Oklahoma City. But now you're talking about a team, hey, it's not your fault if Boogie Cousins is dinged up or Anthony Davis isn't going to play tonight or Rondo's not going to play tonight. You play the schedule that's put in front of you. But the fact of the matter is one of their signature wins was Golden State, but that was the first game of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
You're right in saying it's hard to say that they've seen much adversity since then, but to see what they're doing now and the way they're stacking them and racking them and not caring, that's what I like. Because in years past, as I've mentioned on this show, these are games that they would have slipped up and said, yeah, we just don't have it tonight. We're just going to get the next one.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is the fourth quarter closeout, because they're such a team that's known to come off to such a great start. Like, they're probably one of the best first quarter teams in the NBA. But they shot like 70 or 80% in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And they went up against, and it really wasn't poor defense. Portland, before that game, hadn't made more than 9 3-pointers in a single game before going into that game. They made 6 in like the first 8 minutes of play. And so they were just dealing with a really hot Portland team. Damian Lillard was making everything. Everybody that was shooting from behind the 3-point line was making a lot, especially in the first half. The fact that they were still able to keep the momentum up in the fourth quarter, I think, says a lot, because they are known to not really close out games strong, partly because they don't need to. They come off to such a great start that they don't have to really, you know, score a million points in the fourth quarter. They actually kept their foot on the gas in the fourth quarter, and I think it says a lot.
And here's something that I want to run by both of you guys, too, when I was thinking about it watching. Even as recently as last year, that time when Harden sits down at the start of the fourth quarter has been just doomsday, mm-hmm. where he sits, they blow a lead, and you just got to hope that they can hang on till he gets back in the game. Now, they actually gain ground when he sits down, and that is such a huge bonus, because these guys are not just 3-and-D guys in Bob Mute and P.J. Tucker. They can make shots. They can attack the rim. And you get a little ferocity and a little tenacity. One of the things that I was begging for years was have a couple guys that aren't going to let anybody push their guys around or take any crap from anybody. Well, now you got a couple with Nene, who's sometimes hurt, but now you got a guy like P.J. Tucker that says, touch Harden, I'll put you on your ass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, push my guy, I'm going to dump you down.
I think they even opened the fourth quarter without Harden for like the first 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, Nick, and you bring up a great point, you knew Portland was a little wounded, but the one thing you had to know coming in was Lillard and McCollum are going to give you everything they got, so you got to be ready for it. And they were able to match that. Even when Ryan Anderson goes out, and you'd say, well, God, they're limiting the Rockets' 3-point shooting because now one of your two best is out with Gordon out or Anderson now. They're deep enough now. They can rotate just another body in, and they're making shots and playing D. It's great to see. I said, the playoffs could be a different story. This team is really fun to watch and doing the right things in the regular season.
Second in the league in team points scored at 114.4 a game. Eighth in the league in points allowed at 103.3. That gives them a plus 11.1 differential, which ties them for Golden State in the NBA, or ties them with Golden State in the NBA. The team is doing it on both sides yep. of the court, and that's why they went out and made the moves they made.
No doubt.
So right now, things are looking really good.
Absolutely.
15-1 in their last 16. They lost one game in November, and they haven't lost yet in December with
only
three games. Raptors?
They lost the Raptors at home, right?
I think that was that. That was in November. Yeah, that was the November game that they lost.
Okay,
the
I was
Toronto
say
Raptors.
Either that or Philly late. It was Philly
no,
late. One or the other.
No, it was the Raptors.
They did lose to the Raptors at home because
yep,
I was there.
They did. Yep.
I just don't remember if it was in November.
Did Philly beat them here too?
Well, I know they lost the two games to Memphis.
We'll look it up.
They lost. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Memphis. Back-to-back losses to Memphis the times that they played them, October 23rd and 28th. They had a couple wins in between. Mm-hmm. So they lost three games in October. Two of them were to Memphis. The last game of October was to Philly.
Okay, so there's...
In the month of November, they had the one loss against Toronto on the 14th.
There you go.
That's that since November 1st, they've lost once.
And it was at home, but still.
Yeah.
But just like we said, the Astros need pitching. Well, we've been bitching about the Rockets forever playing defense. They got it now, man. And it's going to be fun to watch because I think they can compete with the Warriors.
A lot more fun to watch than the Texans right now.
That ain't saying much, but you're absolutely right on that.
Hell,
as well.
It may be more fun to watch than that Monday Night Football game tonight. I'm not geeked about Patriots Dolphins. No. I am geeked about the Rockets.
I will say this. The game last night was a surprise to me. I thought the Ravens were going to crap the bed, but that turned out to be an entertaining game to watch.
And the Packers going to overtime against the Browns?
I don't know if that's good or bad. That was like a nightmare that turned into a bonus. Yeah. All right, we got two in the books, one to go, 1 hour left of the big show. And as you can hear, we've got plenty of topics that we've talked about and can continue to talk about, including whatever on your mind that you want to get off your chest. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, or hit us on Twitter. Back with the final hour, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.